Merritt Street, we're building a new morning show where our guiding principle is to always value your time.
We'd love for you to join us. Be part of our community.
Each morning will be packed full of news, information, advice, and a lot of fun.
And we promise we'll never waste your time.
I'm Dominique Soxa.
I'm Fanchon Stinger. Join us for Morning on Merritt Street.
8 a.m. Eastern, 7 Central. Essential television.
You have a willingness to be shockingly honest.
You just kind of tell it like it is, and so do we.
It takes a different breed of cat to do what you do. Hey, everybody, it's Dr. Phil. This is Fill in the Blanks, which you know, and I am really excited about today's guest for a lot of reasons, and I'll just start telling you about it. Nikki Glaser is my guest today. Let me tell you, this is one of the funniest female voices in comedy today, and you've probably seen her because she's been hitting the clubs for over a decade across the country. She's the host of three hit podcasts. She has been honing her shockingly honest, no-holds-barred style of comedy, and she has a brand new daily show, the Nikki Glaser Podcast, which launched in March of last year through iHeartMedia and Will Ferrell's Big Money Players Network. It is a daily companion podcast that is peppered with Nikki's sense of humor and honesty. And when I say honesty, you're going to get a taste of that here in just a few minutes. It helps to keep listeners sane, well-informed, and really laughing through life when sometimes you just need to have something that lifts you up. She's currently on her nationwide comedy tour, One Night with Nikki Glaser, and she has her own series on E!, Welcome Home, Nikki Glaser, which will see her move out of Hollywood, kind of like everybody else, to return to where she grew up, which is St. Louis. It premieres May 1st on E!, so make sure you check it out. Now, that's on E!, and it's May 1st, and I wanted to get this done because I wanted to tell you about it. I have seen an episode, I've seen trailers, and I've had a chance to spend time with Nikki lately. And Nikki, how are you?
I'm so good. It's so good to be here and to hear all of that from you. I've been a fan for a really long time, and it was so fun getting to meet you recently and really get to hang out on the Kelly Clarkson show. That's who brought us together, and I thank her for that.
Yeah, we had fun, and you're currently doing a 40-city tour. How many have you done so far?
Right now, well, it's been going since last year. We had stopped because I had to go film F-Boy Island season 2, which is on HBO Max. But I'm back at it, and I'm like, I do like 3 cities a weekend. So I think it's been 2 weeks. So it's probably, we're probably 7 shows in. It's wild. I mean, it's just Thursday, Friday, Saturday, different city each night, sometimes 2 shows, meet and greets in between. It's really fun, though.
Well, for some reason, some of my best friends are comedians. Steve Harvey, Ron White, Jeff Foxworthy. Yep. A lot of these guys are my best friends that I hang out with a lot. And it takes a different breed of cat to do what you do.
Yes, it does. I like that. It makes sense to me, though, that why you're friends with comedians, because you just kind of tell it like it is, and so do we. And that's, I think, our kind of superpower. But I do believe that all comedians, and I don't know, I would like to hear your take on this. It comes from a place, at least for me, of not feeling loved. And so I need to perform and hear back constantly validation. Like, we like you. Ha ha ha. Ha ha ha. It's not like I play a song for 4 minutes and then applause at the end. It's, I need laughs and validation every 5 seconds. And so I think it came from a place for me, at least, of just wanting to be seen, wanting to be loved from strangers anywhere I could get it. And thank God for that, though. Thank God for my low self-esteem as a child.
Well, it made let's me talk about out. That, because I said when I was introducing this that there were a lot of reasons that I was really excited about doing this. And one is, I think you're a huge talent, and I think you do a great job on stage. But what I love about you is you have no filter. I kid you not, guys. What you see with Nikki is what you get. She has no edit button and is willing to be totally authentic. It's not like, hey, I miss glamorous Hollywood. We'll talk about your new show in a minute. Welcome home, Nikki Glaser. But you have a willingness to be completely, shockingly honest mm-hmm. about everything. But at the same time, you say, I'm like really insecure and need feedback every 5 seconds, but yet you have the courage to be totally, completely honest. To me, that's a contradiction.
Well, I think now I do have self-esteem now. I had to hit some really low lows during the pandemic that brought me to a realization that I was kind of dependent on stand-up and that validation every night to be complete, to not have to be alone with my thoughts, to feel loved, to feel worthy. And then when it was taken from me, I had to actually kind of look at stuff and do some work. And so now I feel that I'm compelled to go on stage now to share, to make people laugh, to make people feel less alone. Like, my compulsion for doing it is different than when I started, but I do believe that I felt as a child so just innately gross, wrong. You know, why was I even born? There's nothing special about me. I really hated myself, and I don't know why, but I just did. And I think when I found stand-up, I found something that really I could talk about those dark feelings and make something of them. You know, it was just too dark.
How did you do that, though? How did you go from feeling like, okay, I don't mm-hmm. fit anywhere, I don't have a peer group, I don't fit in, I'm not what I want to be, to having the courage to get in front of an audience and tell your first joke, your first set, your first 2 minutes?
Yeah. Well, to tell you the truth, I was about to die of anorexia. I had just, committed to like kind of committing suicide in a really slow way that just took over my life. And I was at school and I was in college. I had convinced my parents I was well enough to leave and go off. And I was just going to die because I didn't know what to do. I had no willingness to be open to my life, to eating again, because I just didn't see what I was going to live for. I always wanted to be an actress. I wasn't good at acting. I didn't get into theater school. All the things I wanted to be didn't happen for me. I got really good at dieting, and which turned into something that I could not control any longer. And my life was hell, you know, like starving all day and not knowing how to stop, everyone being mad at me. But when I went to college, I was so scary looking. I looked so terribly thin, and everyone was so worried about me. I had to create a person. I had to just like make myself larger than life so that I could make friends. I didn't want anyone to be worried about me anymore, but I couldn't gain weight. So I'd wear baggy clothes, and I was just funny. I just laid into like, look over here, not here. And then I started hearing, you should be a comedian. And I was just desperate for anything. So I Googled female comedian. I saw some like comedians that I just thought, oh my God, they're just being so honest. And I think my problem was like, I'd never been able to be really honest about the stuff I struggled with. And I thought maybe this is an outlet. And then I ended up being pretty good at it. And it was the first thing that I was like, oh, I have a knack for this. And so the first time I went on stage, I just made a decision. I got to figure out this eating disorder because I finally have something I want to live for. And so I started, you know, I just sought treatment. And then, you know, I got over anorexia, but then it just turned into many other eating disorders that were more manageable and less noticeable over the course of 20 years.
So you know, you just had symptom substitution. You just switched them for other things.
Oh yeah, that's all I do, Dr. Phil. I quit drinking 10 years ago. Then I smoked pot. Then I quit smoking pot. Then I start getting in the food. I was bulimic. I've been, you know, intermittent fasting, which I call adult anorexia. I've tried everything, and then I think when the pandemic hit, that's when I was like, and then workaholism. Like, I just was doing podcasts and sets every single night. Like, I never was home alone. I was never alone. And when the comedy clubs were taken from me in March 2020, I got desperate. And that's when I really sought out recovery for my suicidal thoughts, my overall depression, and really my eating disorder that I had turned into this like very manageable thing that I talked about openly, but really didn't get that honest about. And since then, the recovery of that has opened up this new honesty for me. Cause I think that I always thought I was a very honest person sharing about my sex life. I mean, that's kind of what I'm known for, is like, oh my God, she just talks so openly about her sex life. I, I don't know. I think that's a rebellion because my parents didn't talk about sex. So that's me going, well, I'm going to get on stage and talk about it. And I was always very scared of sex. I talk about sex all the time in my act, but I didn't lose my virginity till I was 21. I didn't have a boyfriend till I was 24. And then didn't have a boyfriend that didn't have another girlfriend till I was 29. I mean, I talk about things that I'm scared of. And, but now I actually feel like I can be completely honest now, which is almost scary because you always want something in your back pocket that you're holding on to be like, this is my truth. But I'm kind of there's nothing shameful about my life anymore. And if there is, it's okay. Like I can handle letting people know.
Oh, hold up. Smell test. Go ahead. Sniff those pits. Now your bits. Feet, toes, come on. Ugh. Could be fresher, right? It's all good. Old Spice Total Body Deodorant Spray is gentle enough to use all over your body, giving you 24/7 lasting freshness with daily use, from pits to toes and down below. So every smell test gets a... Shop for Old Spice Total Body Deodorant.
Your spring is about to get a lot more power with the Home Depot. Get gas-like power from mowing, trimming, and blowing with the Ryobi 18-volt OnePlus system starting at just $89. Mowing power that can take on a third of an acre with one charge. Trimming power with up to 2 hours of runtime. And blowing power with 110 miles per hour of clearing force. All on one interchangeable battery. Get cordless gas-like power for the entire lawn with the Ryobi 18-volt OnePlus system. Only at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
See, I always felt like I was pretty authentic. Now you're making me feel like a real chicken shit.
It comes with, you know, your family being embarrassed on your behalf. It comes with partners not really wanting to be vulnerable with you because they don't want you to say stuff about them. I mean, I've had a lot of missteps of, you know, I'm comfortable sharing my sex life. So why wouldn't the person I'm doing this with, I can't share my sex life unless I implicate them. Well, they don't want it to be implicated. So I'm still learning how to not tell everything because I just don't care what people know.
Yeah, well, you got to change the names to protect the guilty. It's what you got to do.
It sucks, though, when I my boyfriend now, I'm like, but what if we get married? I can't every time I talk about this guy I'm seeing, people are gonna be like, well, you're married, what are you talking about? You know. So I just have to get better about, I have to get creative, you know. If you can't talk about a certain subject, you just gotta talk about other things, and I'll make do, because I think I've really kept myself from intimate relationships because I'm like, I'm an artist, I need to share everything, and if you can't stand it, then get out. But it's just led me to be, that's just a defense mechanism to not get close to anyone more than anything.
Well, what happened to you during the pandemic? The comedy clubs closed, you had to spend a lot of time with yourself. Did you really start spending too much time with yourself and things started creeping up on you? What happened?
Yeah, it was, well, I was living in New York and LA back and forth, so busy all the time. And I was getting ready to kind of maybe go to rehab or something because I was just exhausted. I was about to have a show on E, not the one I'm having now. The one I have now is a reality show. This was going to be a talk show. And I wasn't, it was coming out in May. I wasn't ready for it. It was going, it was 10 episodes. I didn't have enough time with my tour and my podcast and my radio show to even commit to making the show good. So I was so nervous about that. And I remember begging, please, can something just take me out of this? Like, I wanted to collapse from exhaustion, but it wasn't happening. And then the pandemic hit and I was like, thank God I don't have to do that. But then I had nowhere to, I already knew I didn't want to be alone. I had my own apartment, but I just said, I'm just going to go hang out in St. Louis with my parents and stay at their place. What a great opportunity, just hang out with them. And that turned into 10 months. I just never wanted to leave because I was too scared of being alone. And also it made me realize like, this is when I could really use a husband or a partner, or during a worldwide pandemic where I don't want to be alone and I want comfort. I want to touch someone. And I remember one morning was the day it dawned on me. I woke up and I looked in my bed. I'd been eating, binging all night in bed. And I looked and I was like, there's never going to be a man in your bed or whatever you want in your bed because there's wrappers in your bed and you have to wake up every morning and collect all these. It's like, that was the moment I was like, this is why I'm living with my parents at 35. When I have the money to live on my own, this is it. This eating issue you have, you finally need to look at it. It's so loud. You can't distract yourself from it anymore. And that's when I just decided to give up and just do what someone else told me to do, which is not easy.
Yeah, of course. But when you had that time by yourself, what did you think about? What did you talk to yourself about? Were you thinking about everything you had been through? Were you thinking about where you were going to go? What creeped up on you during that time? Because this happened to a lot of people.
They'll forget me. They'll, if I'm not doing stand-up every night, well, this thing, well, stand-up was always the thing that us comedians, if we don't get our Seinfeld TV show, if we don't get our movie deals, if we don't turn into Eddie Murphy, like, you still have stand-up. It's this thing that they can't take from you because there's always the club circuit. And then suddenly it was like, whoa, this can be taken from you too. What else do I have? And I felt the thoughts that crept in were, you are going to get bad. You know, it was always something, it was like not being able to go to the gym and you're training for the Olympics. You know, if you're not getting on stage every night, you start, your talents start to atrophy. And so there was this thing of, I'm not going to be good anymore. They're going to forget me. I'm going to be much older by the time I get out of this. And, you know, Hollywood isn't thrilled by women aging. And there was also, you fucking loser. You don't have the excuse of living with your parents because you don't have money, because, you know, your landlord kicked you out. This is, you're choosing. You have a great apartment in New York that you could live in. You're doing this because you're scared. Just like you slept on your parents' floor until eighth grade because you were scared of nuclear war. Like, all of these fears started coming back of like, I'm still a child. What am I not looking into? And I just had to look at, I don't know. I just, those were the thoughts, and I was crying all the time. And just, you know, I would appear on different, I was like on Bill Maher via Zoom. I was on Conan via Zoom, like in my parents' house. It was wild, and my parents are lovely, and I was so lucky that I even got to be with them. But I would sob and cry after these appearances. I would shut my laptop and just think like, you missed out. Like, you didn't do that one joke. That joke would have been hilarious. That one thing Conan said, you didn't tag it. Like, I would just be riddled with regrets. And my parents were giving each other that look that I saw them give each other when I was four and throwing a tantrum in the car because my Barbie's hair wasn't perfect, of, she's crazy. And I was like, yeah, I'm losing it. So I just had to, I started praying. My parents are atheists. I was raised in a household where it's like, we don't believe in God. Praying isn't a thing. And I got down on my knees at one point because I just didn't know what to do. I had to ask. That's what, like, when you start praying, you know? And I remember my mom walked in on me praying, and I swear to God, it was like worse than her walking in on me masturbating. Cause to my parents, praying is like, what are you doing?
You got caught.
I chased her out, like, it's not what you thought, Mom. I was filleting a ghost. That's why I was bent down on my knees next to the bed. She's like, what are you talking about? So it was, I was just desperate. I just got to a bottom, you know? That was what it was.
You and I were talking the other day, and I said, I don't have the need to be loved by strangers. And you were saying, yeah. Oh my God, really? Because I do.
Yes.
Do you have the need for people to know you're successful? Because you do a lot of things that people probably don't know.
You're right, Dr. Phil. I do so much all the time, but I'm not like someone who brags about it or who posts about it. Like, I sometimes look at my life and I'm like, God, you did so much stuff this week. So many cool TV things, met so many people. Why aren't you posting about this to share it? I think I do it because I need, it's for my parents, kind of. I want them to be proud of me. I'm always telling my parents are kind of like my the ones that I brag about these things. I want them to be proud of me. I think getting on TV was a way to get their attention in a way that I maybe didn't feel I got as a child. My mom watched TV a lot. So I was like, okay, I'll just get up there to get you to like care about what's going on in my life like you do the Housewives. So I think that was a reason for it.
How did you get your first TV thing?
I auditioned for Last Comic Standing when I was a senior in college. I had been doing stand-up comedy for 4 years. I first went on stage my freshman year, and then I just started going to comedy clubs and doing open mics and just really became obsessed with it and thought, this is what I'm going to do. And then my friends, Last Comic Standing, that show on NBC, was auditioning in Chicago. I was going to school in Kansas, and me and a bunch of like, you know, 30-something-year-old male comics rented a van and drove to Chicago, waited out in the snow, and I went on. I knew that I was bad and shouldn't be competing on Last Comic Standing. Like, I knew I was two or three years in. Like, this, no, I always knew my place. I was never like, give me a chance. I knew it was going to, I told my dad, I need financial support for 7 years. Give me 7 years and then you can take it away. But like, if you can, I got, because you can't get good in 3 years. But I auditioned, and all I wanted to hear was them being like, you're young, but you have promise, which is what they said. But then I was walking off the stage. I don't know who this girl was. I was walking off the stage, and one of the judges said to the other, I really liked her. And then another one goes, I mean, I could be convinced. And I heard that. I ran back up on stage, and I said, do you want to hear another joke? And they were like, okay. And then I told another joke, and they go, okay, Nikki, we'll see you tonight. So I went to the competition in Chicago, and then from there I got asked to go to LA and be on Last Comic Standing semifinals, and that was my first like TV thing.
Were your parents proud?
Oh my God, yes. They're proud of everything. I mean, they're proud. They're so, the biggest thing now is I'm talking to Dr. Phil. I'm on his podcast, and I got to hang out with him at the Kelly Clarkson show. They celebrate all of my little wins, and they're always so excited about, you know, I'm on TV all the time because I just do stuff all the time, and they get so mad when they're like, you didn't tell us you were going to be on this tonight. And I just forget sometimes, but I did have that realization recently of like, what's going to be my reason for doing stuff when they're gone? Because it still is that like, look at this thing I drew, put it on the refrigerator. I recently told my boyfriend, I go, you got to start like watching everything I do and telling me how beautiful and talented I am, because I that's really a reason I do this, is for my loved ones to feel, get to, you know, to celebrate me.
Well, that's not unhealthy though. The fact that the people in our lives that we want them to be proud of us is not unhealthy.
Yeah. Okay, good.
You don't think it is, do you?
No, I just feel like, you know, there's a part of me that thinks, if I didn't have that going on, I guess there's a part of me of what would I be bringing to the table? I don't have kids. My sister has kids. Like, this is my thing, and that I got to keep it coming. And, but I also, they're so talented and funny that it was the greatest thing that I could do was creating this reality show that was born of me living at home and being at my parents and being like, what am I going to do next? And I'm like, these guys are hilarious. I was putting them on my Instagram and everyone was like, more EJ and Julie. So I'm so grateful now that I am in a position where I was like, okay, let's do a show. And E bought it. And now my parents are going to get to, my dad's always been a performer and never really pursued it because of just wanting to be able to support a family and not take on this risky business. But now he's going to be, people are going to see how talented he is. It's very exciting.
Give it up for Nikki Glaser, everybody.
I was well on my way to becoming one of the most successful female comics working today. And then the pandemic hit.
So
I moved back to my hometown of St. Louis.
I never get recognized in this town.
I'm Nikki Glaser.
You're gonna get canceled for this.
I don't touch shit, I'm touching mulch. I'm able to spend time with my family.
How did you ever survive this terrible childhood?
I became a comedian. And my ex-boyfriend just so happened to recently move back to St. Louis, too.
Did you go on a date here?
Yeah.
I just didn't want to catch feelings, but I caught them anyway.
If we get back together, we should just get engaged.
So, who knows? Maybe St. Louis is home now.
That is the weirdest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Whoa, Mom, I have a boyfriend. Get used to it.
Welcome home, Nikki Glaser. Series premiere May 1st. Only on E!
You did 8 episodes, right?
Yes, yes.
So describe it and tell people what they're going to see.
Well, May 1st on E! You're going to see a 2-episode premiere of Welcome Home, Nikki Glaser, which is about me moving back home to St. Louis. And it's not going to be filled with the kind of maybe drama that you want and the fighting and the those explosive episodes. But you're going to get real honesty and just a family that loves each other, that is figuring out how to communicate, and me, who is trying to begin a relationship again with her ex-boyfriend, who also moved back to St. Louis at the same time. So it's very interesting that this show kind of, it wasn't something I orchestrated. It really, the camera showed up and I said, okay, well, this is my life right now. This isn't kind of the show I pitched, but this is what's going on with me right now. Okay. And I did everything I could to make it as an honest representation of my life as possible. So what you're seeing is really my life and the state of my room and everything else.
You were telling me the other day, you said, you thought, okay, I need to clean up my room. And you thought, no. Not going to do it.
No. I think that so much of my lack of self-esteem as a child, I was obsessed with pop culture, obsessed with celebrities. I would have done celebrities could have done such a service for me if they would have just shown their imperfections a little bit more. And so I feel it is my duty to show it like it really is, because there's nothing that makes you feel better than seeing someone's bathroom that's a mess that you might project some perfection onto and go, well, at least I'm not that, or, oh my God, she does that too. I'm just trying to give the gift that I really could have used as a young girl who just judged myself so harshly and continue to do so. And so it was really an experiment in me trying to put myself out there in a way that might make me cringe, you know, at times, being like, oh, come on, you couldn't have put on a different, you couldn't have put on some under eye concealer there. But it's a test of me being okay with myself and me being okay that people might not be okay with the person I'm putting out there. But I love her. She's trying her best and she means well. And I believe that for myself now. I don't have this sneaking suspicion that I'm a bad person like I always had before. I think I'm pretty well intentioned.
So if you had to say, what are the five things you're most proud of yourself about you as a person, what would you say?
Oh, I would definitely say spreading authenticity, being really and helping my podcast fans really get honest about their selves. I would say conquering my eating disorder, being very generous with my opportunities and wealth that I have been so lucky to have, and just being and being curious and being able to be wrong. I think as comedians, a lot of times we just, you know, nobody can take a joke. I'm just joking. And I think that I like that I have gotten to a place where I can embrace that I get it wrong a lot of times. Like, I am not giving TED Talks. Like, I'm not presenting facts. And I'm okay if someone gets offended by something I say, because I look to learn and to become a better person and make mistakes. And I just hope that, you know, I can be forgiven for those and not canceled and just, like, you know. So I think that my biggest accomplishment, though, is really overcoming my mental issues of, like, my low self-esteem and being open to new tools. But honestly, my eating disorder, getting that, being 2 years over, it'll be 2 years April 26th of not starving myself, not binging, not exercising to burn calories. Being able to say that is, I mean, I suffered with an eating disorder for 20 years and never once went a week without starving myself or overeating to the point where I was sick. And so now that if I can do it, anyone can do it. And so I think that's my biggest accomplishment, because it's opened up a whole new world to me just in these past 2 years of that. And I think, that's probably been my biggest one. And it's not one I really talk about that much, because it's so personal and so messy. But I like to say that, because I always thought, when I would hear people talk about recovering from eating stuff, like, no, theirs is recoverable. Mine's not. I'm special. And I'm telling you, if anyone out there is struggling with any kind of eating issues, you can recover, because you are special, but you're not special. You're not uniquely terminal, like, of you're the one that's not going to get cured. You can, it's possible.
I get asked sometimes, when people watch what I do, they say, do you really think problems are as simple as you make them out to be? I don't think problems are simple at all. I think problems are complex. I think they're multi-sided and multi-layered, but I think the solutions are often simple. The problems are often really complex, but the solutions can sometimes be as simple as waking up every day and making a different choice about how you start the day. And when you choose A instead of B, then that leads to C instead of D. We have the ability to change the narrative in our life. We can change our own story. We can write a different script for ourselves. The only person we can control is ourselves, and that's the only person we have to control is ourselves. But I think sometimes we think we're passengers, and we're not. we get to choose what we do and what we don't do. Sometimes there's neurology and not just psychology, but that too, you can choose to do something about that. Mm. And I'm so glad to hear you say to people, you can do this. You're not the one that can't be fixed.
I always thought I was the one. I just thought I'm different and, you know, I can't eat three meals a day. I'll be the size that I don't want to be. And you're really right, Dr. Phil. Like, the problem is so much more than just food for me. But you know what my solution was? One day I had to wake up and I had to eat breakfast. Oh, no. Breakfast, the thing that every woman skips, every person's, the thing that we know is the most important meal, but do we? It's like, I don't know any of my friends who eat breakfast. Everyone skips breakfast. And for me, I hadn't eaten breakfast in 20 years. Why am I going to eat a meal that I'm not even hungry for? And one day I was just like, well, let's see if you binge tonight, if you feed yourself all day. Let's just see. I'm just going to, I think I still will, because I think the binge is not about being hungry. It's about I'm feeling things and I like binging. Let me just feed myself all day. I'll just trust because I'm out of options, you know? Let me just do it. And I can always go back to the way I was doing. And I woke up one day, so hard to do, ate breakfast, ate a full lunch, wasn't trying to diet, wasn't trying to skimp. And, you know, that 11 o'clock hour comes around where I used to get in bed with all my protein bars and all my diet foods that I would just like start munching on and go throughout the whole night. And I wasn't hungry for them. And I made it through that night. Then the next morning, I make myself eat breakfast again. It really was a simple step that I just thought. And I'll tell you, like, I am a thin woman and I think I'm naturally built that way. But I never really knew what my body was. I was starving it before I was 18. I always thought that if I ate normal, it would. I wouldn't have the body I wanted. And the thing is, I promise you, you can eat like a normal person and you don't have to do, I always needed less because I'm less. I always have to restrict. I don't get to have pleasure. I have to suffer for my pleasure. It was all connected to these beliefs that I just was open to trying something new and not thinking I had it all figured out. And that was the real trick of being like, I'll just try this other way.
This episode is brought to you by Beyond Natural Pet Food. Beyond Pet Food helps me care for what matters, my pets and my world. They help me nourish my pets with high-quality natural ingredients, like wild-caught salmon and organic free-range chicken. Beyond also has responsible sourcing practices and a long-term partnership with the Nature Conservancy. Beyond Pet Food, your pet, your world. Learn more at beyondpetfood.com.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
Apes hunt humans.
That is wrong.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
I was talking about this with somebody recently. We get in these comfort zones and we tell ourselves, okay, at least this is the devil I know, but our comfort zones aren't really comfortable at all. They're just familiar.
Yes.
And that doesn't mean we like it, but what people tell me is the biggest fear they have is the risk, not of failing, but of succeeding and having to keep it up. It's like, yes. Okay, I did something different. And I got to a new level. Now there's so much pressure to keep myself here. And that's what people worry about. It's like, okay, now everybody's going to expect me to stay better, be better, keep doing differently.
Well, I don't think those people understand that when, you know, like if I'm talking about eating disorder, I was saying this to a friend recently. I know that eating three meals a day is going to be tough for you because you starve all day. But guess what? You're already doing something really tough. You're starving yourself all day. Remember when you first started doing that? How fucking hard that was to do?
Yeah.
Can't you maybe put yourself in the shoes of the, like, this will not be hard for you someday, this new way. It has to become habitual. So it's gonna challenge yourself to do a hard thing. And then I promise you over time, because the way you're living where you're suffering now, it may seem easy. Like you said, it's the devil you know, but it's hard. And it only got easy because you did it a bunch. So just know that you'll get to that place with this new hard thing. And if you don't, we'll forgive you. And you can start over whenever you want. It's only one day at a time. Sometimes I go, it's 1 minute at a time. Just don't go. Don't binge for the next 2 minutes, Nikki. And I go play a song on my guitar. I write a journal page. This one day at a time stuff. I go, days a hard, that's a long time. I take it literally 2 minutes at a time and just go, okay, set the timer for 2 minutes. If you don't want to go back to that bag of chips for 2 minutes, you can go back after 2 minutes if you still want to. And then I start doing something else. And then sometimes I don't want to. And sometimes I do. And I go back and at least I gave myself that time.
Do you think you're ever totally relaxed?
No. Even massages, I don't get massages, because if I do get totally relaxed afterwards, I feel like they like are like, okay, get out of here. And I feel like, well, aren't we going to talk and cuddle? Like, I just feel if I let myself totally relax, there's always an ending and I fear the ending. I'm a pleasure delayer, Dr. Phil. When I was a kid, Christmas presents, I wouldn't want to open them. I would want to be the last to open them. I don't like, I mean, if I orgasms, I push off food. I always want to be the last to get my food. I start getting depressed on the first day of vacations because I know that the end is now coming. Like, I love the buildup. So for me, relaxation means, okay, now that it's starting, this can't last forever. Already start fearing the end.
But you can do it again. You can relax 10 minutes at 8 o'clock in the morning and then 10 minutes again at noon and then 10 minutes again at 5.
That's a good reminder.
You can do this on a regular basis and it lasts for hours.
It's a good reminder. And I have to remind myself of that with food too, because I always go, oh, this meal's almost over. And I go, you'll be hungry again in 4 to 7 hours, girl. Like, it's going to happen. And I just, sometimes you forget that there'll be another chance. I guess it's just, I don't like to reward myself unless there's pain first, unless I earned it. And I think one thing I'm trying really hard to do now is just, I deserve good things just because I exist, not because I suffered first. Just okay. Because I don't have to always suffer. But I just, there's something in me that feels like I can't have good things unless I can't have dessert unless I worked out. Like, it's really hard for me to not have this, you know, punishment afterwards or before something good.
Well, I have to think about this. You said pleasure delayer.
Yeah. I don't want it to come because it means it's going to end. Christmas Eve is the best. Christmas Day sucks because you're like, oh, I got to go back to school in 5 days. Christmas Eve, though, it's like anything could happen. But Christmas Day, I would always be very depressed for some reason. Christmas Eve is still the best. The day before my birthday sucks because it's like, oh, tomorrow it's not my birthday. But May 31st, it's tomorrow. What is that?
But it's renewable. See, you can replace it. Sam Jackson talks about the day he starts working on a movie, he realizes he's working himself out of a job. He tells his agent, when I start working on a movie, you better have two lined up for me the day I start on this one don't ever have to worry that I'm working myself out of a job, because I just know I'm getting to the next one instead of working myself out of this one. Reward is renewable. And I look at all the stuff that you've done. Oh, my God, you've always got something else that you move on to. You don't ever stop.
No. I remember seeing Joan Rivers say, like, I say yes to everything. And, I mean, it killed her in the end. Like, she just was exhausted. But I think there's something in me also that knows that I became successful because I worked so hard. I didn't come out of the womb making people laugh. I think humor was something that I had a knack for, but I wasn't an expert at when I first started. Obviously, it just takes, I'm a big believer in practice, and the more you put in, the more you get out. So every time I say no, I go, oh, someone else is saying yes, and they're going to get better than me, and then I'm going to be forgotten, and then I'm not going to be able to afford to take care of my parents if they get some disease. Like, I just start spiraling with what that could, like, I'm failing if I say no.
It's hard for you to let something go by, to turn something down.
Oh, yes. Yes, it is. I've gotten better at saying no, but it is always a struggle. And I always feel like, you know, that person's going to be mad at me. They're not going to ask me the next time, or, you know,
That's why you're doing my podcast. That's what you're telling me.
No. This is a labor of love. I would have not done this had I not been in the right state of mind to do it. Because I'm getting better about knowing that sometimes I show up to things and I'm too tired. I'm not going to be good. I'm burnt out. And that's suffer. It'd be better if I didn't do it. But there's always that voice in my head that says, what if the one viewer that makes E! Give me a second season is the one woman who is listening to me on Dr. Phil and said, I'm going to support this lady. And so what if I didn't do his podcast and then I missed that one voice? And this isn't just your podcast. This is everything of like, I might miss that one person who might either change my life or I'll change their life by saying something they needed to hear. And yeah, there's just always the what ifs.
Yeah, but you can't do every pie supper in America. I mean, everybody says, hey, I got six ladies coming over tonight. Can you come over? Because I've gotten those invitations that, hey, can you come speak? Look, you could stay at our house and then you can speak tomorrow from 2 to 5. It includes dinner. They don't really get the fact that I kill for 15 minutes of downtime. And yes. I'm sorry, I can't drive to Omaha and stay at your house and speak for 3 hours tomorrow. I wish I could, but I can't.
And also hang out and have dinner. Well, how do you do that, Dr. Phil? Because I obviously you had a phase in your career where all of a sudden you went from being a guy who was probably trying to get his message out, trying to be seen. All of a sudden, everyone wants you. You go from being someone who has to say yes to everything to someone who's getting every opportunity. You can't say yes to everything. Was there ever points where you had burnout and said, I'm doing too much? And what did you do with that?
You know, I hit different phases. There was a time when I was in private practice and I told Robin, if I ever get to the point where I really don't have a passion for this, because I think there's different kinds of currency. And I think you got to really pay attention to what your currency is. Like if you do things for money, which is not bad, but there's financial currency, there's social currency, there's spiritual currency, there's emotional currency, there's social currency, there's all kinds of currency. And I said, if I ever get to where I'm doing this and I'm not passionate about it, I will walk away. One Christmas, we were on break and we went down to the office and I opened up the book for January and I started thumbing through it and there wasn't a 15 minute window for like 6 months. And I'm like, oh my God. And that should be great news, right? It looked like 6 months of root canals. And I, oh God, I said, this is that day. I got to do it. And I quit. I stopped. Then I was in a completely different profession in litigation consulting, and I got to that day after about 15 years where I said, I just don't want to do this anymore. When I get to that day where I'm not excited every day I wake up, then I don't do it anymore. I go and do something else. Mm. And if I'm not passionate about it, I can't do it.
Yeah.
I don't have to do it, so I don't. And I'm really still passionate about what I'm doing now. And if I get to that point, I won't do it.
Yeah.
I can't. It's like running underwater. You just can't do it.
And
it becomes work.
We wouldn't want you to do it. Like as a fan of artists and speakers, when I find out someone's sick on stage or they're going through something and they didn't really want to be there, Eric Church, he wants to go to the NCAA championship and he's canceling his shows. I'm like, go, because I don't want you to be thinking about that basketball game you'd rather be at. I want my entertainers to enjoy it. And I think that's another reason why I like to be so honest is that if I am doing a show and I'm not with it, or I just found out my aunt died, I can go, my aunt just died and I'm not feeling good. And my audience isn't going to go, what is this? They expect that honesty from me. And it makes it so I'm able to just share the whole truth. And it's also why I bring my best friends out on the road, because I know that the company I keep is really going to keep me in the kind of I have to enjoy it. You know, I have to enjoy this work. And like you said, I'm lucky enough to be in a financial position where I get to make things that I can switch it up if I want to.
Yeah. Let me tell you, my viewers, if I do a show that I don't really want to do.
Yeah.
Like the producers are like, hey, come on, you got to do this. And I don't want to. Yeah, you do. No, I don't. Yeah, I do. They always win. I mean, Hollywood, supposedly people surrounded by a bunch of sycophant yes men. I can't find anybody who doesn't argue with me. I don't have any yes men around me. They all argue with me and give me shit. And if I wind up doing a show that I don't really want to do, man, my viewers, you go to the message board, he didn't want to do that. He was not into that. He didn't want to do it. He gave it his all. He leaned into it, but he really, they know.
They know because you're honest. I mean, you're not going to maybe straight up say it out of courtesy to whatever you're doing, but like, yeah, they can tell. And thank God for that. That's how you make great fans who are there for you during those times and who can kind of read you like a good friend could.
They pay so much. I've walked over before and washed my hands and left my wedding ring by the sink, and they bring it to me at the end of the first segment, and the message board, he didn't have his wedding ring on the first segment.
Oh my God.
Are you kidding me?
Oh my God.
I was washing my hands and forgot it.
That is so funny. Yeah. They know you, and it does feel good. Sometimes, you know, they get it wrong and you feel totally, that's another struggle. It's just like people's opinions of you, if they don't like you and how vocal they can be. And I've just done, I haven't read a YouTube comment about myself since 2010.
That's good. That's good.
I really am good about it because that is, I don't have TikTok on my phone. I know when things are like, this ain't good for me.
Yeah.
And I remove it. It's only going to bring me, a lot of pain.
I've read some mean tweets on Jimmy Kimmel where he said,
oh,
I read God, mean tweets.
I don't even like watching you guys do that because I go, this is going to ruin his day.
No, it doesn't. Love one that said, why don't you shut up, you bald-headed hillbilly?
Sometimes they just cut so hard.
I had one that said, I would rather have Dr. Pepper operate on my than take advice from Dr. Phil.
Sometimes they're pretty.
I mean, somebody's writing for that guy. I don't know.
Yes. Sometimes these guys, I'm like, wait, can you write for me? I know. Some of these trolls really nail it. And sometimes they know you so well. They can find out your character. I've had a couple, on my podcast, I do it every day. It's called the Nikki Glaser Podcast. I do it in my apartment. It's with my best friend, Andrew, who was my roommate for a while. I can be a grumpy kind of, bitch some days. And I'm faced with my fans going, you weren't very nice to Andrew today. And I go, you're right. I've had to see some sides of myself that, are painful to see, but it's made me a better person. I just really try to keep it as real as I can. I don't wear hair extensions. I went through a period during COVID where my hair was falling out and I was going insane comparing myself to girls on TV. And then I realized I do TV. I know the tricks. Everyone wears hair extensions. Dr. Phil's got some in right now.
God, I wish.
Yeah. It just was like, and so I go, you know what? I'm not wearing them ever again because I want to just, first of all, I just want to be okay with my, but then I also wear fake eyelashes and I spray tan myself. So it's all an illusion, but I'm honest about that stuff. I'm honest if I have fillers and I have, Botox because I'm tired of thinking that J-Lo just used a topical cream that I could get on the shelf at, it's Estee Lauder. It's like, no, these people are not telling you the whole truth. Stop comparing yourself to them.
Yeah. There's a lot more goes into that than meets the eye. So if you hadn't done this, if you had never gotten on stage, never gotten on television, what do you think you'd be doing in your life?
Therapist. A psychiatrist, something to do with helping people, listening to people. I really am into psychiatry and why we and social, just anthropology, just why we do the things we do. And I think it would have led me to that. I think I would have started as a teacher and realized that is not cut out for me. That's sometimes such a thankless job, and my sister's a teacher, and I don't know how they do it. But I think I probably would have gotten I sometimes think about going back for my master's just so I can have some sort of, because the more my stand-up becomes more and more about self-helpy and I don't want to always just make fun of everything and make fun of myself. I want people to leave shows laughing, but also being like, oh, I kind of like have a solution for that thing that I struggle with, because she made it funny, but also she offered me a tool. And I'd like to have some credentials to back that up when I get on my soapbox a little too much.
But you can make people think. Many a truth is spoken in jest. There's a lot of truth in humor, and you can make people go home and really think with some of the stuff you say.
Yes.
Particularly with your authentic kind of humor.
Thank you.
I mean, you really can make people think. You can give people a little cheat sheet for life.
Thank you. I'm trying. It would have, just doing what would have really helped me at certain stages in my life, motivated by just wanting people to be less depressed and anxious and all of those things that I just know are just such awful places to be. And you feel so just like you'll never get out of them. And I've been there, and I feel like that's like my duty, and also to make it funny. And so that's adds an extra layer of difficulty to it. But yeah. Comedy is always my first thing.
I'd said to somebody not long ago that when I was in private practice, I was the worst marital therapist you've ever seen in your life.
Because
I had no patience for them. I mean, they would come in and I would listen to them talk, and I said, my God, I've known you people for 5 minutes. And I can't stand either one of you.
You deserve each other.
And it's like, I can sit here and listen to you for 6 months, or I can just tell you right now, you're an asshole and you're insufferable.
I love that.
So people would say, God, you're so straight with these people, you'll never build a practice. And that's not true. I did, because people wanted to know. They wanted to have somebody tell them the truth. But
yes.
One of the things that really impacted me is I had so many people that would come and see me that discovered that they were depressed, and they never knew they were depressed until they weren't. They had spent their whole life being depressed.
Yes.
And they never knew they were depressed until they were no longer depressed.
Yes.
They just thought that's how people lived.
It's just fish and water. You don't know. And a lot of times people in relationships, they don't know until they see inside someone else's relationship, like, oh, wait, that, you know, when you're a kid and you think every home is like your home, and you go visit your friends and you're like, wait, their parents like talk to each other and love each other. Like, what is the, like, you only, that's so interesting. I think that I'm interested in I'm just started going to couples counseling with my ex-boyfriend before we decided to get back together. I said, I want to go to couples. We never did it before. He's never really been to therapy, was not really open to it. And I said, I can't be with you unless we go, because we keep getting in these same patterns. And he goes, we're going to go to couples therapy before we're a couple. And I'm like, yes. And he's like, doesn't that mean we're just broken? And I go, no. And I'd use the best analogy to get him into therapy ever. I go, okay, well, you know, so you think we should just know what to do automatically, and if we were meant to be, it would just be natural. And he's like, yeah, kind of. I go, well, then why do you go to a trainer? There's weights and you have muscles. Just do it. Just like, why don't you just do it? And he was like, God, you're good. He goes, fine, I'll go. Like that. He goes, I can't argue with that. Like, I go, we're going to see someone who might have tools that we never thought about. Oh, straighten your back. Stick your butt out when you do a lunge. Like, there are things that are just, you know, that we didn't go to school for. And man, is it the greatest thing that ever happened to us. And we don't go all the time. We just go when we need a tune up.
Yeah.
And it's the only reason we can be together. I'm so grateful for it.
Yeah. Sometimes it's just getting a different perspective too. Having somebody say, hey, did you think about this? Did you think about that? Because it's not what happens in a relationship that gets people upset. It's violating your expectation of what's supposed to happen in a relationship. That's what gets you upset.
Oh God, that's so good. Expectations being, you know, future resentments.
Yeah.
And letting go of those. And really, for me, it was just empathy. I mean, I was having sympathy for how he felt, and he would repeat his experience so much. And I go, I know that's how you felt. And he goes, you don't know. Really, imagine you're me, the man who's dating a girl, you. And I'm like, okay, now in your, when I'm you, that does feel shitty. And you're right. But when I was you, but I was still me, and I was just on the other side of the room, but I was still me, I was still right. Empathy is something I really was not taught and didn't have expressed to me growing up in kind of a little bit of an alcoholic home. It's just something that you don't know that you're not getting and that you think you have, but it's quite different than what I thought I was doing. It's very different.
Yeah, there's so much that goes on that's not obvious. It's not commonsensical. I do a lot of work with law enforcement, and I was just doing some work with some national law enforcement, and I was thinking about negotiation. When you're doing like hostage negotiations, people don't realize this, but you're never going to get somebody that's holding hostages for any reason to give up their hostages until they believe that you understand why they took those hostages to begin with. It doesn't matter. You're not going to get them to see your point of view until they understand that you get why they did it. They'll never give them up, not one time in 50 years, until they believe you understand why they did it to begin with.
You're so right. Because when I'm in a, anytime, let's say the hostages in this situation are my boyfriend apologizing to me or us making up is like the hostages being freed. I will never get that resolution to an argument unless I repeat back to him exactly how he felt, honor it, make him feel completely understood that I get what that felt like to him. And as soon as I do, everything resolved. The hostages get released. Yep. That is the ticket. That's so interesting.
Yeah. And if a woman, if her husband's cheated on her, she will never forgive him until she hears him tell her, I know how that made you feel. And this is how that made you feel. Until she hears that, till she knows he gets it, she'll never forgive him.
Ugh. What a shortcut. What a complicated thing to do, to be able to reiterate to someone their feelings in a way that feels substantial enough. But that truly is it. That is the secret to any conflict resolution.
That's why I say, I don't think problems are simple at all. Infidelity is complex. Why did you do it? What was your motive? What was wrong? But the solutions to healing some of these things can be very, very simple. It's really giving words to your empathy. You just got to know. And sometimes if you don't go get help, you can't figure that out. You're too close to it.
And you just got to be open to the idea that you might be wrong.
Yeah.
You can always, that's the thing that I really had to, you can't let any of this in until you go, you shouldn't go to therapy if you're like, I just can't wait for her to tell him what he, how he's fucking up, because I know I'm right. I've been that girl before who thinks I'm doing everything right. You got to be open that you might have something to do with this.
Yeah, maybe.
You can always find anything you can always find what you could have done slightly differently. And that also I found is such a good tool to walk into an argument where you know you're right, to start out saying, here's what I could have done differently. And it opens that person just, that's another difficult thing, is finding the one little thing, you know, even though you were the one that was wronged. That's nice to hear.
Yeah, that's why your comedy lands so well. It's authentic. It's real.
Thank you, Dr. Phil.
Listen, congratulations on all your success. I mean, you got to be. Really, you got to be proud of the stuff that you got cooking. You got more stuff going on. And I want to remind everybody that you do have a daily podcast, the Nikki Glaser podcast. I want everybody to know about that.
Mm-hmm.
You're on a nationwide comedy tour right now, One Night with Nikki Glaser. And you've got your own series on E! Called Welcome Home, Nikki Glaser, which premieres May 1st on E! What time is it on, at 9 or 10?
At 9. The Kardashians' old spot, so
yeah,
big shoes to fill.
Not a bad spot to be.
No.
And, so that's May 1st at 9 o'clock. So, I mean, you got more stuff going than you can shake a stick at. So
I know. I'm busy.
Congratulations on all of your success.
Thank you.
I'm going to put all of this stuff on the website so everybody can find it. And if she's coming through your town, go see her. You will laugh till it hurts, and you'll learn something while you're doing it, even by mistake.
Thank you so much, Dr. Phil. And I also implore anyone who wants to go to a show alone. A lot of times people don't go to comedy shows, concerts, because they can't find someone to go with them and they're too embarrassed. If you go to my show alone and have the bravery to do that and be cool enough to be like, I want to go, I will, if you write me on Instagram and write going alone in all caps and tell me which show and your name, I will give you a free meet and greet. Which is usually like $50 to $100, because you had the bravery to like not need a friend. And so I want to extend that to people, because I think it's very cool to go to things alone.
Oh, that's really cool. I'm glad you're doing that. And I bet you people take you up on that.
They do, because people are scared to go alone. You got to incentivize it. And then once they do, I think they're eager to go do more things alone, because it sucks when you bring a friend to a show that you got to talk into, and then the whole time you're worried about them having fun. Like, just go alone and just be, make a friend, make another friend that's alone. You both like the same thing, you know? It's a good place to meet people, so.
Yeah, and they're there with you.
Yeah, I'll be your friend. You'll meet me after the show, and I'll give you a hug, and we can take a picture, and I will sincerely be your friend.
Yeah, and she will. I'm telling you.
I will.
I know her. She will, so.
Uh-huh.
Nikki, thanks for doing this.
Thank you, Dr. Phil. I appreciate you so much.
All right, I'll see you soon.
Okay, see you soon.
Okay,
bye.
Bye,
Dr. Phil.